Welcome back to the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's Richard Pollock. He's Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program our good friend from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
I am doing very well. Good morning to you guys.
How excited are you for Monday to finally come and go?
It's kind of a mixed bag. It's a lot of work, but let's not kid ourselves, guys. This is exciting stuff. This is big news, and there's lots of interest. This is sort of why you get into doing what we do. I enjoy this, but it is tiring and exhausting. My wife's not here, or I'd be saying yes. I can't wait for 3 o'clock Monday, because she's not a big fan of me or the job right now, but that's the way it goes.
Exactly. Aaron, let's start off by talking about the Jeff Carter deal, which went down earlier this week. We were discussing it earlier on the program. Did Scott Housen and the Blue Jackets do as well as they could hope in what they acquired for Jeff Carter?
I think they did, yeah. I mean, everybody in the world knew that Jeff Carter was a guy that the Blue Jackets wanted to move. I think they felt like they had to move him. They wanted to get him out of here as quickly as possible. That's never a good way to go into a trade situation where everybody knows you're desperate to move a guy. If you look at it with that backdrop, the fact that they were able to add a defenseman who's young, who's extremely competitive, a big minute guy, 23, 24, 25 is not a problem for Jack Johnson. They get him in return. They also get a first round draft pick either this year or next year. It's always too early to say who won the deal, because Carter could have a great run in LA, of course, but I think they did very well considering the circumstances. Yeah.
Was the team surprised, Aaron, by how poorly Jeff Carter reacted, throughout his short tenure in Columbus, to being in Columbus, not being in Philadelphia, and just maybe a lack of professionalism, for lack of better terms?
Yeah, I think that's there. And you know, players are starting to, off the record, even acknowledge now that, look, they liked the guy and they all got along with him fine. But my, oh my, just to be professional, you would have handled the situation far different. From the moment the trade happened, his agent and Jeff Carter said, you know, it wasn't about the destination. It's nothing to do with Columbus or the Blue Jackets. It was all about being treated by the Flyers after they'd made so many concessions to stay in Philadelphia. But I think as the situation played out here, I think people began to feel otherwise, just because of the body language, the way that he played, fairly disinterested for a lot of the games that he did dress for. And I'll say this, and a little bit in his defense, I don't think there's any defense for not playing hard or not playing with pride for the team that you're on. But, you know, so many people look at Columbus from the outside and they see it as a hopeless situation, a losing organization, because that's what it's been for 11 years now. And I think coming to Columbus and the team performing the way that they did, it lived down to all of Carter's expectations, and he wanted out and got his wish, apparently.
Aaron, we want to ask you about a player who hasn't been getting that many headlines lately, and that's Rick Nash.
Yeah.
A couple of questions about Rick Nash. Are all indications 2 days before the trade deadline that he's going to be moved? And as far as the Columbus Blue Jackets go, why wouldn't they wait until after the season ends, possibly until the draft, which is a question that has probably been asked to you and you've definitely heard. Why wouldn't they just wait a little bit and trade him after the season ends?
Well, they might. And honestly, at this point, all indications are that's how it's going to play out. They've never said we have to move this guy by the trade deadline. They've never said we got to move this guy.
Is there any chance that Rick Nash is going to stay in Columbus? Is there any chance that Rick Nash is going to stay in Columbus?
Long term, I don't think he's going to be with this team when the season starts next year. No, I really don't. That's the sense I get. But I don't think they absolutely have to do something by Monday. That's the leverage that they have in this from the Blue Jackets' perspective. Is look to the rest of the league. It's look. We don't have to move this guy, so come to Papa if you want him.
Right.
This isn't a situation that's toxic yet. I think this could get that way. There's growing urgency, growing impatience, if you will, on the side of the player at this point to get something done and get it quick. The longer this is out there, the greater the likelihood that this becomes a messy situation. And for what Rick Nash has meant to the Blue Jackets, to the city, and for what the Blue Jackets have done for Rick Nash through the years, nobody wants it to go that way. Nobody wants to end that way with Rick Nash in Columbus.
Aaron, you're our go-to Columbus Blue Jackets guy, and you cover the team, you know, in-depthly. And from your conversations with Rick Nash, does it seem like, I know he would probably never tell you this, but do you get the feeling that he wants to go to a winner? Does he want to stay in Columbus? What is Rick Nash thinking through this entire process? Because he definitely, even though he might not turn on TSN every day, he obviously knows that he's the big guy that everybody's talking about. You hear about him going to Toronto. What does he actually think about this whole situation?
Well, he's not saying a lot, and to be honest with you, it's a little, I don't know, over and over again from Rick's side and from the Blue Jackets side, it's, we're not going to respond to rumors. And I'm saying to myself, look, kid, you gave the team a list of teams you want to go to. You know this isn't a rumor, okay?
Right.
But they haven't said anything about it. They won't even address it other than to say that I'm a Blue Jacket now and yada yada. I think as this has gotten out, I think there's been great trepidation on both sides that this would become a situation that turned publicly ugly. So they've treaded very, very lightly on this. They don't want to say anything that could take it in one direction or the other. But I think as this has come out, I think Rick Nash, and I think it's only human, I think he has started to think beyond the fence here, beyond the only team that he's ever known. And he started to see these markets and these teams that are always in the playoffs, who know how to win hockey games, expect to win hockey games and be in the playoffs and challenge for the Stanley Cup. And I don't think anybody would blame the kid if he started to get a little bit excited about what might transpire here.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch.
Aaron, quickly, before we move off of the Carter-Nash, sagas, because there really is a lot to talk about in Columbus. We could probably have you on for quite a while, consume most of your morning. But do you think that Jeff Carter and his negative, maybe, view of Columbus in any way has affected Rick Nash's overall perception of the organization?
I don't think so, because Rick Nash has a much bigger body of work to look at than just the 6 months that Jeff Carter was here. If anything, and maybe the fact that Carter didn't want to be here and wanted out, I don't know if that just further convinces Rick Nash that it's time to move on. Perhaps, I guess. I mean, I think what has Rick Nash thinking that it might be okay to leave Columbus more than anything else is the fact that, you know, here are the Blue Jackets again. They thought they had a team that was ready to compete, and guys, it's not like they struggled. Look where they're at in the standings. They're 30th, and they're in 30th by 11 points. I mean, they're miles away from being competitive. And I think he hears people in the organization say a tweak here and a tweak there, and he sees the same people still in charge, and the culture here, maybe he's responsible for part of that. I think that's only fair. He's the captain. But I think he looks at the situation here and thinks, boy, it's going to be a long time before this changes, if it ever changes. So maybe now's the time to punch the ticket.
How much of the Blue Jackets' struggles, Aaron, this year can be attributed just to goaltending?
A lot. I think that's a significant part of it, certainly. The question becomes then, you know, is the goaltending poor just because the goaltenders are poor? Is there something else at work? It's not a team that plays competitive, smart, sound hockey. And then they were, you know, I think it surprises a lot of people. And in Winnipeg, certainly the notes got on him. This right. team just, it, when they played in the first 41 games this season, but also the last 60 last season, you know, who are these guys? What are they doing out there? And Steve Mason has not been a good goaltender at all. There's no question about that. But, in his defense, he doesn't know what's coming at him on a nightly basis. He has no idea how the team is going to play. He's played with, I think it's 25 different defensemen in the last three seasons. The play is always inconsistent. It's all over the place. But, you know, again, he has been poor. His body language is embarrassing, frankly, some nights to see him respond when he lets a goal in. And nobody's been able to reach the kid. I mean, two different coaches now the last 3 years. Obviously, Ian Clark knows what he's doing as a goaltending coach. And he still, you know, looks like he's lost a lot of nights, just all over the place. The players don't know what to expect from him, and I think it's the same the other direction. And there's no confidence either way.
You mentioned nobody being able to reach Steve Mason. Is it an arrogance factor, or is it just a frustration with the circumstances, or is it just something in his own head, or is it, you know, factors?
I think there's a little attitude there that's just who he is. Goalies are sort of always odd. No offense, goalies.
Don't worry.
But for example, you see teams practice over and over again how to defend a 2-on-1 drill. The Blue Jackets do this all the time. And the rule is the defender's job is to take away the pass, always take away the pass. And darn it, when Marty Brodeur has a 2-on-1 coming at him, he knows that he's got to take care of the shooter, just the shooter. Steve Mason has no idea how that play is going to be defended. I mean, it's just, if you watch them in live action, watch the games, when they're defending a 2-on-1, and they defend a lot of 2-on-1, it's all over the map. It's less than 50-50 that the pass is taken away. And so you see the goaltender, and this is just an example, you see him, rather than being locked onto that shooter and taking away the near post or whatever the situation is for the shooter, he's cheating because he's legitimately not sure how this is going to be defended. And I think there's a breakdown in the rest of your game when that's the reality. I think that's where they're at. I was last year convinced that he had to move on to be a really good goaltender. But now I'm with some other people who think that maybe this is Jim Carrey part two, where the losing and the play the last couple of years is just who this guy is. And maybe he's not going to get it back together again, but we'll see.
Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. The other deal that the Blue Jackets made this week was dealing Antoine Vermette to the Coyotes in exchange for a couple draft picks and Curtis McElhaney. Sort of seems like a salary dump for the most part, but the second-round pick could have some value. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a salary dump, and it's a roster spot dump. I mean, Vermette, it's sort of he drifted out of the top six here. He was playing on the wing and the third line, which, you know, that's not really where he was supposed to play here. A great face-off guy. I'm not sure why he's on the wing and the third line. But, and you know what? He's not a guy that he's a really, really great guy if you've ever been around him. He's a superbly kind man and a guy that a lot of players like. Not the most competitive, physical-type guy. And I think they're looking to move away from guys who are sort of kind and positionally sound. I think they feel like they need to ratchet up the attitude and the competitiveness in the dressing room a little bit. So they make the move, and that was a bad contract, and now they're out from underneath it. So that's good too.
Aaron, I'm going to slide in here with one last one. What else do you see happening with Columbus? Do you see them dealing possibly Paulson and maybe McKenzie, Dorsett, and I guess you can really go through a lot of the players here. What do you see happening at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody without a no-trade clause could be very well moved. There's a liquidation sign on the door or the dressing room. I think Paulson's gone for sure. I think they could trade him right now if they wanted to. I just think they're waiting for a better pick in return.
Yeah,
I think Curtis Sanford could be on the move, too. He's a guy who's played really, really well as a UFA. And you know what? I think there could be some surprises, too. I think Blue Jackets fans would be surprised to see R.J. Umberger on the move, but I think that's possible if they get the right deal. I think it's less likely, still possible, but less likely that Derek Brassard moves. I mean, they've shipped two centermen out here the last couple of days. I think the price for him's going up a bit. He's played really well the last month or so, but you guys know how this is. The guy that nobody mentions sometimes is the guy that ends up going. Mm-hmm. And I would not be surprised at all to see some of that in Columbus. I think they've got a lot of balls in the air right now, and they're willing to listen to anybody.
We lied, Aaron. This is the last question. Is this
that's three last questions,
come on,
Drew.
Is this Craig Patrick who's making these deals, or is it Scotty Howson?
No, it's Scotty Howson. Now they're working together, but the final word is Scott Howson. He is still the general manager. You know, they would be fools to have Craig Patrick here, especially with the significance of this Rick Nash trade, to not lean on a guy like that who's had such experience in the game, who's made big trades before. He's doing a lot of work, but Scott Howson clearly is the guy who's got his finger on the final call button.
Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch, thanks very much for putting up with our three last questions. good luck for the next 48 hours, and we may be in touch sometime on Monday again.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.
You too, Aaron. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Aaron.
Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch talking Blue Jackets hockey. Santa Lucia Pizza game day. Jets Blues gets underway at 1 o'clock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes later on. That and the entire show will be available. Go to iTunes, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Congratulations again, Ezzy, for showing up on time.
Had to go get a couple Diet Pepsis for Richie and I.
You made it back. We're very proud of you. You didn't get lost in the empty building. No.
Remember when Macho Man used to come out to this music with Princess Elizabeth?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Miss Elizabeth.
Oh, sorry.
Princess Elizabeth.
Sorry, I was thinking of Princess Toadstool from Mario Brothers. Miss Elizabeth. And then remember Miss Elizabeth? Someone stole Miss Elizabeth. I think it was Rick the Model Martel. Remember him? He used to spray people with his perfume.
What about British Bulldog?
He stole a human being?
Who did British Bulldog? Who's his wife?
Davy Boy Smith. Oh, that British Bulldog.
Bret Hart's sister.
He was married to Bret Hart's sister. That's right.
What was her name? Elizabeth?
Remus, where did you come from? Haven't been here this whole time.
All right, Remus, get in here.
You guys are talking about wrestling. I thought I would get in.
Yeah.
British Bulldog's tag team partner, Dynamite Kid.
Who is his wife? Was it Elizabeth?
No, I don't think his wife was ever involved in wrestling.
Did Bret Hart's sister?
It was Jim the Anvil.
That's the British Bulldogs
team. Jim the Anvil Nighter is married to...
Oh, that's right.
They're both, and him and British Bulldog are both married to Hart sisters.
That's right, but who are the, what are the names?
Who knows?
I don't remember that. Stu Hart's dungeon.
Okay, Remus, when you do the correction at the end of the show, you can bring in their names.
Oh, right.
Okay. While you stroke your goatee.
Okay, Remus, if we're not going to talk about Greg the Hammer Valentine and the Honky Tonk Man, I think we should move on.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the Alex Hemsky contract signing.
That's an interesting one. We have enough time?
It's an overpay.
Not enough time for the show today.
There's a lot going on.
Let's do Hemsky.
Okay, let's do Hemsky. He's re-signed in Edmonton for 2 years, $10 million.
Which tweet was better?
We'll get to the Flames tweet.
What about Modano?
What did Modano say? Oh, I didn't see Modano's.
Oh, pull it up.
Okay.
I'll get into the contract.
You talk about it.
The thing about the Alex Hemsky deal is this.
It's terrible.
Well, no, but I think what happened is Steve Tambellini didn't make the move with Hemsky when he could get significant return for him. We talked about how he mismanaged this. And so if his options were trading him for second-round pick and a middle prospect or re-signing him,
shouldn't he sign not to pay him $5 million a year?
But at least you made the right move in terms of keeping him. And, Ezzy, $5 million is an issue because he's overpaid, in my opinion. I like Alex Hemsky a lot. But if you're overpaying for a two-year deal, who really cares? It's when you overpay for a 10-year deal that I'm worried about, or a 5-year deal. It's
please,
a 2-year deal.
Please see Ilya Brizgalov.
And he doesn't have a no-trade clause. They can move him at any point.
What I think they're doing here is they sign him, see if he can get back on track. But if not, you have him in the middle next year, you trade him, he's got a year and a half on his deal, then you get a better return. So while they probably should trade him 2 years ago for a nice defensive prospect to get moving with this young squad, or even an established defensive player, because they need a defenseman, if not three.
If he's playing well at the trade deadline next year, you could get some decent value.
Or even in the middle of the year.
Yeah, because he's under contract for one more year.
I didn't mind it. And I like Alex Hemsky. I know he's got 5 goals, and everybody's saying five, you know, you said Ezzy before.
A goal, a million.
Yeah. Alex Hemsky is not a goal scorer. He's a creative player who I think
he is what he is.
You put him on the Jets, he'd still be the most productive offensive player, in my opinion. I think. I get the most points. If you put him in the Jets, you get the most points on the team.
Rich, here's the tweet from Mike Medano.
Okay.
2 years / $10 million for Hemsky. Scored over 20 goals twice in 9 years. WTF. What else does he say?
Does Mike Medano have a Twitter account?
Yes, he does.
You retracted it after.
I won't be following him.
Drinking too many margaritas.
Yeah, well, he didn't retract it that hard because he retweeted Jamie Rivers of the St. Louis Blues, who tweets, "Seriously, that guy barely shows up half the time. What a joke. Low-budget teams have to overpay guys just to get to the floor."
Well, another factor, too, is the floor. You know, the Oilers have money there, but and they don't mind spending it, per se. But I think that you're looking at it in a vacuum. I've always been terrible this year. Alex Hemsky, I mean, is he the winning player, the guy you want on your top line going to the finals? Probably not, but the Oilers aren't going to the finals, and it's about keeping an asset or getting something for it. So as opposed to trading him for very little, again, they should have done it 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. But if they're at the point now where they can sign and maybe get something more for him later on, and, you know, say, for example, that next year or even end of this year or next year, he starts tearing it up and he's a point a game, because he can do that, a point a game for the first 40 games of the season. You deal him then, you get more than you get now.
But this is Steve Tambellini we're talking about, so he'll probably re-sign him to an 8-year, $50 million contract at that point, something along those lines. I mean, all bets are off when it comes to that.
Drew, I want to get in here really quickly.
Really quick, because we're right up against it.
Okay, and $5 million, I mean, Hemsky's worth $5 million in this market. I mean, if you think about it, the contracts guys are getting, $5 million is about right. There's a reason why they gave it to him for 2 years.
I think a little bit too much.
A little bit too much, but where does he fit in on that right wing when you have Eberle and Nugent Hopkins? Is he? I like it.
Nugent Hopkins, they want at center eventually. And all they want to play. But what they want at center is Nugent Hopkins, and they have Horkov. So I mean,
let's let the best there ever was, the best there ever will be, take it over here.
In the middle in Edmonton, you can have Nugent Hopkins, Gagne, and Horkov, and be fine. Have Paul on the wing. You know, he can be play a little center, but you want him on the wing. And Nugent Hopkins is a natural center. Horkov's a natural center. And so is Gagne, so that's fine.
You know what? Richie is the excellence of execution.
Very good. Stop talking wrestling now. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That rhymes.
I know, that's why I say it. Here on TSN 1290.
That's a man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
That's not a rhyme. That's a palindrome, if I'm not mistaken.
Palindrome's a shape.
What's a Pinterest?
I don't know what a Pinterest is.
I don't know, but Richie, you have a lot of interest in Pinterest.
Anyways, we're going to get Jeremy Rutherford on the line momentarily. So
I wish I could Instagram my emotions right now.
Wow. Jets Blues.
So early. It's so early.
Jets Blues at 1 o'clock today at MTS Center. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at noon. Hustler and Lawless follow us in 1 hour's time. Big game for the Jets.
They all are.
They have to. Washington won last night. Washington plays Toronto tonight at the ACC.
Yep.
You're
hoping that's not a three-point game.
That's what you're hoping more so than anything, is that it's not a three-point game. Who do you want to win that game?
That's a good question, Drew.
I guess it depends on what the Jets do?
Probably Washington, only because they have a harder schedule than Washington. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the Southeast is just the biggest joke ever, right? So you have all these teams with goal differentials below minus 10, which is hilarious. So if that's the case, Washington's going to have a lighter schedule than Toronto. So you probably want Toronto to win and then have a tougher time moving forward.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that'll be will be a game the Jets will watch after this afternoon contest.
Quickly to get in there, Drew, it also is extremely interesting to me, both of these teams and what they do before the deadline, because these teams are both in flux. What are they? Where are they going? What's the long-term goal? We know long-term goal, but what's the short-term goal? And we don't know that. And I know Brian Burke holds press conferences for no reason, just to talk about his trade aspirations.
And then not do up his tie.
As opposed to just going out and making trades without holding these press conferences.
Well, if you talk about doing something, it's like you're doing something.
Apparently.
Yeah. You know, if I talk about getting my work done, it's like I've done the work until somebody asks me, where's the work? And then I don't have anything to show for it.
He has a press conference tonight, apparently, or later today.
He does?
Yeah, apparently.
Did they get a goaltender?
I don't know why, but why is he having a press conference? What's he talking about? Why isn't he on the phone?
Well, I personally, if I have my druthers about what kind of general manager I get, I want one who's not really heard from very often. Just behind the scenes. I mean, how often do you hear from Chevy? not very often. And when he speaks, he doesn't say anything of any consequence, which is sort of the way it should be. I mean, that's the way you want your general
manager. I
don't
mind the GM talking. Don't get me wrong. Like, I see the way Chevy does, and more power to him. And that's most GMs do that. I don't mind Burke talking necessarily, doing interviews. But it's just the proclamations he has. We're doing this.
Pugnacity.
It's like, well, you know, just take it easy and let your actions speak. Actions speak louder than words.
Right.
Let's talk about the St. Louis Blues team that we're going to be seeing tonight. Yep. They are probably one of the surprises of the NHL. Dominant home record, 26-4-4 at home.
Yes.
Yep.
Terrible road record, 11-13-3. And before you guys even answer that, I think we have Jeremy Rutherford on the line. So why don't we go to Jeremy right now? Jeremy, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. I hope you're enjoying the lovely Winnipeg weather.
Looking out the window of the hotel here, this is great, right? Sunny day game. It's going to be a good day.
There you go. You can enjoy the nightlife afterwards then.
We'll let you go, Desi.
Jeremy, the Blues come into Winnipeg today with sort of a terrific home record, but an average at best road record. An average would probably be a polite way of putting it. Why the difference between the home and road record for these St. Louis Blues?
Yeah, it's been a tough question to answer. I think one thing you need to point out right off the bat is that they've actually played some pretty good road games and not gotten a result. They've played a couple tough games in Detroit, and then in the third period, the Red Wings step it up a little bit. Also, early in the season, I think even when Davis Payne was still coaching, they had a win at Vancouver, they had a win at Philadelphia, so they've had a couple wins in some tough places to play. But you're right, recently, it hasn't been a good place. They lost in Columbus the other night, and I just think there's probably a variety of reasons. They were trying to turn around the play at home the past couple of years, and they've finally done that, and I think you put a lot of emphasis on that, and then you try to go play that same way on the road, and it hasn't necessarily transpired. I know they haven't been successful all year on the power play. It's been, even worse on the road, and a lot of the individual numbers, the splits for a lot of guys aren't as good on the road, so they haven't stepped it up, and that's what they've been trying to do. They got a big win in Nashville a couple nights ago, and now they're trying to carry that on here to Winnipeg.
Jeremy, since Ken Hitchcock took over for Davis Payne in early November, I think they've only lost five regulation games. Can you talk about what he's done to this organization behind the bench, specifically how he's changed the defensive makeup of the team? Because right now, and I don't think that this is getting enough play, the Blues are allowing the least amount of goals per game in the NHL, and that's kind of incredible. It obviously starts with goaltending, but can you talk about Ken Hitchcock and really what he's done to the dressing room and how the players have reacted to a guy who's arguably one of the greatest coaches of this era?
Yeah, first, the big picture, guys, is that, Davis Payne was a good young coach. He's going to be a good coach in the league. But I think that when Ken Hitchcock came in, the team was 6-7, had big expectations, and it just quite wasn't getting it done early on. But they did have a lot of road games. I think 9 of those first 13 were on the road, so kind of a tough sledding early on. But Ken Hitchcock came in, and he told his guys, just go play. I talked to a couple individual players who said, hey, you're going to make a mistake 1, 2, 3 times. I just don't want to see it 4 and 5 times. And I think that took some pressure off some guys. Also, Yaroslav Halak had gotten off to a really bad start, and Davis Payne was kind of forced to play Brian Elliott, and then Brian Elliott really started to take off, and then now Yaro's sitting on the bench, and he's getting a little frustrated. So, maybe some relationships. So I think when Ken Hitchcock comes in, everybody gets the proverbial, clean slate, and they just took off. They just went out and played. And the second part of that is I think that they knew that Ken Hitchcock had been in every situation imaginable in the NHL, and that whatever the Blues found themselves in, he could get them out. And there's been times where there's been second and third period adjustments that have made the difference, and I think when the players see that, they put even more trust in the system. And the last part, talking about the defensive style, Ken Hitchcock from day one came in and wanted the St. Louis Blues team to be a different type of condition team. He wanted them to take short bursts you know, get to this spot, get to that spot, let's get the puck out of the zone quickly. That's what he believes now, coming back for this job with the Blues, is that he's watched the league the past couple of years, and it's getting the puck out, transition, getting it to the forwards, moving down the ice, and the Blues have done that. I think they lead the league in number of shifts since he took over, and that's because he's got the guys, you know, on and off the bench, short shifts, doing a lot to get the puck down the zone. Now, they haven't been scoring a lot, and they realize that they were kind of built to be that type of team, but they do get the puck out of the zone quick.
Very interesting. You know, Jeremy, the team has succeeded at 5-on-5 maybe as good as anybody so far this season, especially since Ken Hitchcock's taken over. What about special teams this team? You know, penalty kills just around average, and then power play has struggled for the most part all year.
Yeah, it's really been the biggest issue with the St. Louis Blues has been the power play, and you have the personnel on the unit to be a lot more successful. They haven't had any consistency, confidence, all the cliches. They haven't moved the puck well. You'll see it get better for a week, and then it goes back to its you know, typical shape. And it's really been a hindrance because this is a team that's not going to score a lot of goals. As a matter of fact, they're averaging 1.96 on the road, so they're, you know, getting by because of their goaltending and their defense. They're not going to score 3-4 goals a game, but they do need that extra goal, and it needs to come from the power play. It hasn't. They know it needs to be better if they're going to go deep into the playoffs, especially on the road. I think they come into today's game, guys, 0 for their last 16, you know, on the road power play. And the penalty kill's been okay. I think it's come up with some key stops and some key times, but it hasn't been consistent. But, you know, like great 5-on-5 play, one of the best in the league, and they're even putting up some numbers that are going to be at top of the NHL, you know, as far as the league goes back. But in terms of the special teams, it hasn't been there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, he hasn't played since really almost New Year's. That's Alex Steen. We had him on this program about a month ago or so, and he said that he thought he was close to returning, and still no progress, still won't be in the lineup today. Is sort of frustration setting in regards to his concussion, or is it just, you know, everybody sort of knows that there's no answers when it comes to that sort of injury?
Yeah, I think there's really been no rhyme or reason to his rehab. He in fact, he suffered the concussion and then played a game, I believe, the next night or the night after, before the concussion was diagnosed. And I really do think, you know, no fault to some of these trainers. They have a really tough job to try to diagnose whether these guys are concussed or not. But Alex Steen played a game, and we've seen it in a couple situations in St. Louis where if these guys, you know, come back and finish a game, or in Alex's case, go back, you know, even if they don't get another shot, just simply going out there and exerting that energy, and, you know, while you've recently been concussed, I think is doing damage. It seems like the guys who go back out and play, like an Andy McDonald, concussed in the third game of the season, in the second period, he went back out for the third period, and then he missed 51 games. That's really been tough for some guys. And with Alex Steen, the Winnipeg boy, he looked like he was going to come back. He was skating again, smiling, and then he stopped practicing with the team. And so people are trying to figure out, you know, what it is. But I think, you know, throughout the league, you know, all of us in the media are trying to figure out what the rhyme reason is to the, you know, timetable when these guys can come back. And it seems to be different for every single player. But, you know, right now I know Alex Steen is hoping to get back into the playoffs get back into the lineup before the playoffs start. But you know, right now, still not skating with the team.
Jeremy, we're about 50 to 60 hours away from the NHL trade deadline. What do you think John Davidson's going to do on Monday or leading up to Monday?
Well, I think, you know, to talk about what they're going to do or not going to do, you have to understand the ownership situation, and that's that it's still ongoing, the sale is, and there's a group trying to buy the team in St. Louis. Tom Stillman, right now, he's a minority owner, and that deal has not gone through, nor is it imminent. So the Blues are operating on the budget of their current regime, which isn't a good situation. They did up the budget at the beginning of the season, allowed them to get a Jamie Langenbrenner, a Jason Arnott. But as we get to the deadline Monday, it's a situation where they're probably going to have to go dollar for dollar if they make any deals. And right now they like their chemistry. And right now, of course, we talked about the defense and the goaltending. They like the way it's playing. Would they like to add a goal scorer? Probably so, but you know, who's out there and how much? I don't know that it makes a lot of sense for them. They're still hoping to get and Alex Steen back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. They could use maybe a veteran left-handed shooting defenseman back on the blue line, but I just don't know that the money's there, nor do they want to part with the assets if they don't think this is the year that they're going to be serious contenders. They like their team, and they hope they can get a round or two in the playoffs, but they feel like their years are still to come.
Jeremy, is the return of Andy McDonald recently kind of like a trade deadline acquisition?
Yeah, they've had a couple of those. You know, even David Pryor, I know it was well before, you know, Monday's trade deadline, but getting him back was like an acquisition. Getting Andy McDonald back, that's the way they have to feel right now because of the financial situation. They're not going to be bringing in a guy like a lot of these teams are to get a boost for the postseason. So, you know, getting guys like Andy McDonald, I think he scored in three straight before the Nashville game. And David Blond has, I want to say, like 27 points in 35 games since he's returned. Those are the guys that they were counting on for help more so than the trade deadline guys.
Jeremy, Yaroslav Halak and Brian Elliott have both been excellent this year. Do you get the sense that Ken Hitchcock hasn't decided which guy he's going to go with in the playoffs, or do you think it's Halak or Elliott, and maybe why do you think it's going to be one or the other?
Well, if you ask Ken Hitchcock, he says that he doesn't have to go to one guy. He thinks that he can continue to play both, and he says that he will continue to play both until one of them falters. I think they both benefited from the rest. I think that's why their numbers are still good, because they haven't played as much as maybe a number one guy who's been there the entire season. And I think that maybe as we get closer, Ken Hitchcock will feel the need to go with one guy. And my own gut feeling is that it'll probably be Yaroslav Halak. I think Brian Elliott hasn't let in as many maybe softer goals than Halak. Even Halak's been tremendous. Ever since November when Ken Hitchcock took over, Yaroslav Halak has been tremendous. But I think that once they get down to the stretch here, the final stretch, that Yaroslav Halak has been there. He went to the Eastern Conference Finals with Montreal, took him on that run. Brian Elliott has a playoff appearance with Ottawa, but it wasn't to the magnitude of what Yaroslav Halak went through. And right now, I think if they had to choose, they'd go with Halak, who, by the way, is going to be in net today against the Jets.
Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we'll see you up in the press box in a couple hours.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks a lot. Let's head to break. That was Jeremy Rutherford. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by the good people at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Kelly Taylor, very funny comedian at Rumors tonight. I'd say get tickets to the 7:45 show, but that's already sold out. There's very few left for the 10:30 show. So be sure to call Rumors, 204-488-4520. Apparently he was so funny last night that upon the show finishing, a customer walked up to him and handed him a P1 ticket for today's Jets-Blues game.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, that tells you he's funny. So 7:45 show at Rumors is already sold out.
Based on your performance today, I would take away a P1 ticket from you.
I don't have a P1 ticket, but my dad's going to be at the game with my grandfather tonight.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, right. So you know they have P1 tickets.
Too bad the game's in the afternoon.
They'll be there this afternoon.
You know what I'd pay $50 for? Richie Pollock at Rumors doing a Drumondel roast. I would pay $50 for that.
The Drumondel roast really never got off.
I got to be honest. I'm disappointed. I thought you were really committed to that.
There was some worry that we'd be a little bit too harsh.
I have trouble believing that you could ever be too harsh to me.
It's funny, Richie, because we saw Jeff Ross, who is the Roastmaster General, and Drew is known as the Toastmaster General.
That's very clever. Thanks for showing up on time, man.
I did.
I know.
Drew, you can't say that with a sarcastic tinge anymore.
Of course I can.
I was on
time once out of three times.
Oh, so you're... hold on. Do you want to make another bet?
No,
Chris,
there's no other
cue my music.
There's no other 7 o'clock shows. You have a theme song now?
That's right. What do you? Hold on. If you want, we can make a bet. Name a place. Name a place. I'll show up there on time.
Any place.
Any place. Right? I'll show up there at 7 o'clock in the morning. How about work? I show up on time. 8:30 every day. I'm a company man.
Needless to say, the company's going broke right now.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about the Jets Blues game. It gets underway 1 o'clock.
Love that music.
Here on TSN 1290. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at noon. And Hustler and Lawless follow us in about 35 minutes' time. What's the key to the Jets coming out victorious against the Blues this afternoon?
You know, the Jets have to be able to create offense, Drew. And that's, you know, an obvious statement. But against a team that's really good defensively, and they played against a Tampa team that basically was Norfolk Admirals, as he said it was. I mean, they had one line, NHL line, and the rest of the team was you know, pieces of
call-ups.
AHL players and call-ups and such. So you're playing against a team that, you know, Philly dominated the Jets. But at the same time, Philly wasn't as tight defensively. So you're playing against one of the best defensive teams in the National Hockey League today. You cannot be turning over the puck in the neutral zone. Things that Alexander Burmistrov does all the time. Sometimes, you know, guys like Evander Kane become a little bit too predictable. Against a team like this, you need to get the puck in deep through the neutral zone. And Tampa plays, you know, that 1-3-1, so you have to get the puck through the neutral zone there too. But their forwards are not as defensively responsible. Their defensemen don't take as many risks. St. Louis doesn't. So you're gonna have to play a disciplined game. Now you look at their power play. If it means for the Jets taking a penalty or two to make sure that a really good scoring chance doesn't happen, well, you'll take your chances against the 25th best power play in the National Hockey League. But I think overall, this game is 3-2 max with very
You
know, 3-2 max, I think. This is a 3-2 game written all over it, maybe even 2-1.
Well, I mean, St. Louis just doesn't give up that many goals. I mean, they've given up 123 goals on the entire season, which is
and the Jets
second in the NHL right behind the Rangers at 122.
And the Jets prefer to play a defensive style. You have Hitchcock against Noel here. They'll both prefer to play a defensive style if they can.
They would know each other a little bit, their styles.
Of course they
do. Noel replaced Hitchcock in Columbus.
But the Jets play a defensive style for the most part, and St. Louis obviously does. So you're going to see a more physical game than usual, which I mean, that's for the MTS Center fans. You're going to see a more physical game. You're going to see a tight checking game. It's you know, who makes more mistakes, really?
Hopefully we'll see Winnipeg or Ryan Reeves in the lineup. But Richie, you're right. They're going to have to play a smart game. And I think it's going to be a chess match. Paul Waldy wrote about in the Globe and Mail, and a lot of people maybe didn't know the backstory, Drew, but Ken Hitchcock and Claude Noel have a relationship that goes back to the Kalamazoo of the IHL. And then, of course, Noel was the assistant with Ken Hitchcock in Columbus before he became the interim head coach. So they know each other well. And this St. Louis Blues team, and I know Richie is like Hitchcock for many years, and he's been a cup winner and an Olympic gold medal winner as a member of the coaching staff of Team Canada, but he's a smart coach, and this team is very good. If you've watched them play this year, this is a team that's ready for the playoffs, and Jeremy Rutherford said himself, they might not make any moves at the trade deadline, maybe one or two, but they like their team. They've got Andy McDonald back and David Perron back, and on defense, you've got Cole Iacovo and Peter Angelo as your top pairing, and then you've got Shattenkirk and Barrett Jackman, who's a stay-at-home defenseman. Think Mark Stewart, but better. Barrett Jackman has been in the NHL for 10 years now, and he's very good, but that top line is going to have to, you know, bear down and you know, get the puck's deep, and you hear that a lot, but this is going to be a game where I agree, Richie, it's going to be a low-scoring game. St. Louis Blues are very good defensively, one of the best teams, and I don't think they're really getting enough credit for that going into the playoffs. When you look at the Blues, who are in a home ice seating right now in the Western Conference, they're going to be a tough team to play against. They don't lose a lot of games at home, but obviously, you know, this is a road game for them, but this is going to have to be a game where the Jets make little or no mistakes, because, you know, the Blues do have some players like TJ Oshie that can make you pay, and obviously David Backes is having a good year, but this can't be the Jets team that opened it up like they did against the Philadelphia Flyers.
And
the Blues don't have as much offensive talent as the Philadelphia Flyers, but this isn't the type of game where they can score a goal and then start to open it up, because the Blues will make you pay. Maybe not so much on special teams, Richie, like you mentioned, but 5-on-5, this is one of the better teams in the league.
If you look at this team defensively, offensively, in terms of the Blues, you have a fair amount of size up there with a guy like David Backes, with a guy like Chris Stewart, Jason Arnott, Patrick Berglund. Those are big boys there. So can guys like Hainsey and Oduya manage those guys off the boards. They were having trouble with the big guys against Philadelphia. So that's something to watch for as well. The cycle game, the bigger guys down low. Haynes, you know, do you know whether the Jets play seven defensemen or six defensemen, and then what their pairings are when they do the seven defensemen or six defensemen? When they had seven last game, they're mixing it up a bit.
Yeah.
With six, they had Haynes, you know, do you together. They got eaten alive against Philadelphia. Now Philadelphia is maybe the best offensive team in the league, one of the best for sure. But the size of Philadelphia's big forwards was causing that pairing of Haynes, you know, do you a lot of trouble. And I'd hazard to guess that if they do go with six guys today, that
and by the sounds of by what Coach Noel said yesterday is he wasn't crazy about the seventh defenseman.
Looks like Fair's going to be back in.
Yeah,
well, I mean, and it could be Miettinen, even though he's on.
We don't know that for sure, but it looks like it.
Whatever it may be, guys, I think that they have to make sure. I would guess that Haynes and Dio will probably be split up, and they'd put a bigger guy, you know, a tougher Jones Stewart combo with more of the skater puck moving guy, just because. When the Haynes and Dio pairing was together. And they have some strengths, but it's going to be a slower-paced game, and it's going to be a lot of tight checking, and I think that they could have an issue with the size on the boards there.
Yeah, and we don't expect Zach Bogosian to be back.
He'll be back earliest on Monday. Earliest.
They've been it's been the next game every single time, but it hasn't he hasn't skated with the team in practice yet. He's been skating on his own.
That's happened with Bufflin too, right?
I mean, right, and then it just went on and on and on and on.
And you know what? No need to rush it. You never want to rush an injury, and we've seen Bo go up in the press box, and he wants to be 100%.
I don't blame him for that, but I'm just saying, the team needs him back there. I mean, they don't have any luxury of. Right. It's not like the Jets have a luxury of a buffer or anything where they're miles ahead and they can hold a guy out for a bit. They need him back and back soon.
Yeah, and even though we don't know the intimate details of an injury, and I think people in this day and age get. I mean, in the day and age of Twitter, people realize that, they look at five games. It's a couple weeks. Sometimes an injury takes a couple weeks. So everyone gets caught up in, it's been so long since he's been out. He's been out for a couple weeks, and you got to wait. And I realize that, it's frustrating, and they do need him back. Richie's mentioned this time and time again. Even though Bogo, everyone wants to think of as this, 60-point defenseman, and maybe he'll get there one day, but he's a shutdown defenseman. That's what the Jets need him as, and that's what he does best at this point.
The offense hasn't been the problem. Look, especially from the back end.
Buff has 11 points in his last eight games. I mean, Buff, we're getting enough offense from our defensemen. Enstrom is chipping in, so he'll be back when he's back. And for now, I mean, even though I'd like to see Flood in the lineup, I really like Flood. Sometimes it's a numbers game. The fourth line, I mean, they get 8 or 9 minutes. So do you dress that third forward when you're gonna, recycle, Stapleton, around on the other line? So we'll see what happens. It worked out fine, but the indications are that Noel probably won't go back to seven defensemen. But once again, that's not confirmed yet.
And Flat, I thought, played quite well in his return to the lineup. Yeah.
He's always steady. Yeah. He's always solid back there.
He's been. Yeah,
he'll get re-signed. He's no problem by. By Chevy.
No, he hasn't. He certainly hasn't been overwhelmed by any stretch. We'll find out. Jets Blues gets underway at 1 o'clock at MTS Center. Brian Munns, Shane Knighty, Dennis Bayak with the call. It's Yaroslav Halak in net for the Blues. We're not yet sure for the Jets. Some thinking it's going to be Mason, but we'll find out around game time. Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 12 noon. And Hustler and Lawless follow us in about half an hour. Ezzy, before we go to break, it's Remus reminds me that, you guaranteed to be on time anywhere from now on. You were late to Tuesday's game. You forgot it was a 6 o'clock start.
You know, we're not talking about what happened in the past. We're talking about right now. I was on time. I was here 10 minutes early. I showed up on time today. I woke up for charity. I wake up early. And I proved it.
You proved something, all right. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com, where the Jets Blues game day preview written by the one and only Ezra Ginsberg is now posted on the site. www.illegalcurve.com.
Not only did I wake up early, I wrote my game preview for Dave Manouk of illegalcurve.com.
I'll be more impressed if you wrote it without getting. Do you have any errors in that?
No, I always spell check, Drew.
Yeah, spell check is a good thing, anyways. So the game preview is available at illegalcurve.com at the moment if you want some updates there. We still don't know who's in net for the Jets. We think it's going to be Chris Mason, but we're simply speculating at that point. So don't blame me.
He's got to get in.
It's either going to be today or Monday.
Yeah. Pavlik has played, I think it's five, maybe even six games in a row. Might even be seven.
Mason played in Minnesota, did he not?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so, I mean, Boston.
It's been five or six games.
The Islander, yeah. I mean,
you've got to get Chris Mason in either today or against Edmonton. The way Pavlik has played, and I hope that this is going to transition perfectly into Richie's article that he wrote for LegalCurve.com, a two-part article looking ahead to Pavlik, who is an RFA. Pavlik has been unbelievable. That 50-save performance, the Flyers got the extra point. Jágr got the goal in overtime, but if Pavlik didn't have the entire support of all of the Winnipeg Jets fans, he got it with that save on Voracek and that performance. He reminded me, you know who he reminded me of? Nikolai Habibulin back in the day with the Jets, and a Hasek-like performance. He was unbelievable. So, but even with that, Richie, everyone's got to get a rest. It doesn't matter if you're Marty Brodeur, everyone's got to get a rest. So that's why we'll see Chris Mason either today or Monday.
Let's talk about the article you wrote, Richie. It's available on illegalcurve.com. What Richie did is, as he's done for a number of other players, he did it for Zach Bogosian in the offseason. He's done it for Evander Kane. He did it for Andre Pavlik. Now, Pavlik's an RFA coming up after the season. He's an RFA with arbitration eligibility.
Yes.
So we, you know, Richie sort of broke down the marketplace as it relates to goaltenders and, you know, tried to figure out what is a reasonable expectation for Andre Pavlik given, you know, his performance, given other players who've signed contracts recently, you know, around his age and everything along those lines. You know, why don't we talk about sort of your findings to start?
Well, Drew, I mean, I guess it starts off with, and the article points to that, it starts off with what the strategy is, what the theory is on goaltending for the True North staff. And that being Kevin Cheveldayoff and his brass, because there are teams in the National Hockey League that value goaltending and would be willing to pay for it. There are teams in the National Hockey League that don't value goaltending as much and aren't willing to pay as much for it. So, for example, you have a team like Detroit who always will be able to get by on paying very little for goaltending.
Right.
Chicago's kind of, you know, mimicked that.
Mm-hmm.
San Jose, for the most part, kind of was about that for a while. They gave Niemi a little bit more money. But there are other teams, for example, like the Rangers and Boston, who spend a lot of money on goaltending and then serve them well. So there's two kind of ways to go about this. We don't know right now what the Jets' way is because...
And then there's Philly that spends a lot of money on goaltending.
On bad goaltending.
Yeah. But generally before hadn't spent as much money on goaltending, right? Like the Philly got to the cup final. They were there with Layton.
And Boucher and Bobrovsky.
And they spent no money on goaltending. Yep. So, I mean, but did that strategy work? But it got
you
to the
could
final.
Say maybe that Philly used to. Now they've converted out of panic.
Exactly. That's exactly. I would say that, Ezzy. So, I mean, that strategy, you have to know kind of where the organization lies there. We don't know because Pavlik's contracts, his second contract, and Mason free agent contract with Atlanta were both signed by the previous regime. So mm-hmm. We don't yet know. We know, you know, Zinger working with the Moose, you can't really tell because of the cap situation so different. Yep. Cheveldayoff was in Chicago. They didn't spend a lot on goaltending, but also, you know, was that him? Was that Stan Bowman? Where do we come in here? And there is also the middle ground. So that's something to take into account, just in terms of organizational philosophy. I think the next step is always to pick up comparables, guys who you can compare Pavlik with. What's he worth vis-a-vis the other players in the game? And the players we picked out, Carey Price, in the same draft year, Carey Price and Tuukka Rask, Jonathan Quick. Okay, guys, so those were guys drafted. Sorry, not Jonathan Quick. Carey Price and Tuukka Rask. So Carey Price...
But you can also look at guys who weren't necessarily drafted the same year of Pavlik, but in and around that same area. And then that brings in Semyon Varlamov into the discussion.
Yes. It brings Semyon Varlamov in, Quick in, Halleck in, all those... You know, so a different group of players in for each one. Now, Pavlik's numbers overall is career save percentage. Now, save percentage is a better indicator of talent than his goals against average. Okay?
Right.
Because you could have 50 shots a night and a lot of four goals, still have a solid save percentage, right?
Yeah. Like Pavlik did on Tuesday night.
Exactly. So his career save percentage is .909, and everybody else's is at least .911, if not higher.
Pavlik is .909, Varlamov is .911, Quick and Price are both .916, Halleck is .917, and Tuukka Rask is .926.
Now, system is a factor there because Boston's system is going to be higher, you know, higher save percentage system.
Yeah.
LA's the way they're playing defensively this year. But Montreal, I mean, Carey Price, I don't think anybody in the league will argue right now that Andre Pavlik is a better goalie than Carey Price.
That Andre Pavlik is a better goalie than Carey Price?
No, I don't think so.
No, you're saying Carey Price is better than Andre Pavlik.
I don't think anybody will argue that Pavlik is better. I mean, people may argue. I don't think it's true. I think people, overall, Carey Price has proven to be a better goaltender than Andre Pavlik.
Okay, I just want to clarify what you were saying. Yeah, so Carey Price greater than Andre Pavlik at the moment.
And so you take, you know, Carey Price's second contract was higher in annual salary than Pavlik. So you're kind of getting a baseline of Pavlik's coming in on his RFA, his third contract, okay? He's a restricted free agent, meaning a team can tender him an offer sheet, right?
Yeah.
But I think when we get into that, you know, get into the free agent issue, it's all about leverage. Leverage is the main issue here.
Sure.
So what is Andre...
supply and demand in the marketplace.
Exactly. So what is his leverage? If you look at it by other teams in the league, need versus want, I mean, you look at, go through the whole league, you could say the Islanders need a goalie.
They seem to be set. They seem to be trying to get Nabokov back under contract.
Yep. You could say Toronto needs a goalie.
They seem to be
maybe.
Getting, yeah, they would.
Right.
Yeah.
New Jersey, if New Jersey,
if not next year, the year after.
They need an heir apparent, certainly.
Tampa yep. Bay.
Yeah, they need a goaltending.
Chicago, maybe.
Yeah.
Edmonton, maybe. You have about seven teams who may need a goaltender, and I will.
It's not a lot.
I stress may.
Right.
And that.
So you're saying there's about, you know, 23 teams in the league, three quarters of the league almost, that is pretty much set in goal.
That's right.
So, which means that there's not a huge market for Pavlik services.
And then when you take into account the fact that there will be free agent goaltenders this year, such as Vokoun, Brodeur, Harding, Gustafsson, Nabokov, and then Ben Bishop, if he doesn't play 17 games, he's in St. Louis, he's in Peoria right now, he's a St. Louis prospect. Taking into account those free agents, plus other backups like Corey Schneider, Jonathan Brown, there really isn't a market for goaltenders.
There's a lot of goaltenders, but not a lot of spots for them.
So in saying that, I don't think there's much of a threat of an offer sheet for Pavlik.
Right.
And I don't think there's much of a trade market for Pavlik. So his options really are to hold out or sign a contract.
Right.
Going now, arbitration is a part of the signing.
Let's talk about arbitration. Okay. So, I mean, right now he's at the point as a RFA where he's eligible to take the team to arbitration.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Arbitration is not usually a very pretty instance. We spoke to Bobby Holik about that a couple weeks ago on this program. He had a very ugly arbitration incident.
And also, I'll tell you this, in terms of Pavlik,
yeah,
his stats aren't great for an arbitration argument.
No, that's right. And unfortunately for arbitration, it really does come down to stats. It comes down to numbers. I mean, the eye test only goes so far in arbitration. At some point in time, the Jets can walk in and say, look, his save percentage is only, you know, 9-10 or whatever it is. You know, he's only got this many wins. Right. His goals against average isn't great. Watching him, we know better, and we know that we think he's a very good goaltender. But his numbers in an arbitration setting aren't, in a vacuum, aren't terrific.
That's great. That's right. And then that becomes an issue, right?
Because
then his arguments, you know, for example, what if the Jets miss the playoffs again? Well, he's played on non-playoff teams.
Yeah.
No.
And he doesn't have great stats.
Yeah.
So where's his arguments?
And that does affect them a little bit. But you go back, for instance, you go back to Florida.
Yeah.
Back in the day, Roberto Luongo was putting up, you know, 93% save percentage, but Pavlik, obviously, the most important thing he's done for the Jets is play more games than he did last year and provide them with a lot of wins, obviously. But as far as his goals against goes, that's when the Philly game back in October or the blowout in Montreal, games like that have raised his goals against and his save percentage. But you're right, Richie. The fact that he is an RFA and the market for goaltenders isn't strong when you've got, you know, 15 to 20 teams that are set in goal, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of offer sheets. That's not to say that a lot of teams wouldn't want to have Andre Pavlik on their team. But when you're talking about a guy who's an RFA, this is a guy that the Jets, I've said this before, and I realize that maybe saying he's a Vezina candidate, that's, I like to go a little bit too far, as anybody who's listened to the show would know, but I'm sure that the Jets think very highly of Andre Pavlik and what he's done this year. He's overachieved, I think you could say.
Look, he's a bargain for what they're paying him. I mean, they're paying
absolutely
$1.1 million this year or something.
$1.15
So he's a bargain, you know, in a cap hit.
Yep.
So let's talk about some of the guys we mentioned before. What have they done in their recent contract signings?
Well, right now, I mean, that's something you have to take into account because Yaroslav Halak is a guy who's posted, you know, he's played 190 career games.
Yeah.
He's posted superior stats to Andre Pavlik.
Right.
And so
he's had a deep playoff run.
Right. And he played for Slovakia and in the Olympics, etc. So what you have there is you have a guy who's on a four was signed a 4-year deal for $3.75 million per.
So his cap hit right now is $3.75 million per year.
Taking him into some unrestricted free agent years. But the problem is
which, as we've said, so it's not what you're doing at that point is you're paying a little bit more because you're buying out a couple of unrestricted free agency years.
UFA years is what he could get on the open market.
So which is more usually. So you buy those out. It's going to cost you a little bit more.
The player has all the leverage.
Right.
So you have a guy like Halleck. But at the same time, you also have the fact that Pavlik is still a restricted free agent for the next 2 years. So the first parts of his contract are generally going to be discounted, and then the latter parts, if you sign him to a long term, will be reflect a higher amount.
Well, but, so
I mean, can you pay him? The question, I guess, is how can you pay him over a guy like Jaroslav Halak, you know, on a cap hit basis, 3.75? I mean, he hasn't really done anything more than Halak.
He's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. Yeah. So, I mean, it's unlikely that you're going to sign him for a one-year contract because there's no real reason to sign him to a one-year contract. You'd be back in the same boat next year. Right. He's still he has salary arbitration rights, but he's an RFA. So you're probably looking at a minimum of a two-year contract.
Minimum two-year deal, but if you're the Jets, do you want to have him play another year and then going into his UFA year? That provides the player with a heck of a lot more leverage.
Especially if he plays at this level.
Exactly.
So 2 years, if you sign him to a two-year deal, you don't have to pay him as much money because you're not buying out any of his unrestricted free agency years.
Right.
So, but 3 years, you're going to have to pay him a little bit more. And 4 years, you're going to have to pay him even a little bit more. Yeah. But the risk increases, obviously, as you sign a guy to a longer-term contract.
That's right.
And I think Richie, I don't know if you thought about this because this is, it's not really, it's a little bit outside of just analyzing Pavlik, it's more so what Chevy has done so far. The first signing was obviously Andrew Ladd, followed up by, which was a five-year deal, followed up by the Blake Wheeler and Bogo deals, which were 2 years each. This is kind of a little bit different than all three of them. Ladd, you wanted as your captain, and you wanted to sign him long-term and show that this is the guy that we're going to build our team around with Andrew Ladd. But Pavlik is a little bit different because Bogo and Wheeler are both guys that are a little bit unproven.
Right.
I think Pavlik has proven himself. I don't think Pavlik has anything to prove anymore. I mean, he made 50 saves against the Philadelphia Flyers, one of the best teams in the league. What else does he have to do? He's proven himself, but you mentioned, would he want to take it 3 years? And if you sign him to 5 years, is that too many? So I wouldn't be surprised if it's 2 years with Pavi, but maybe the Jets are thinking we want to sign him to longer than that.
I think it's a three-year minimum. I do.
So you buy out one of his UFA years?
Yeah, minimum. I put the contract value as of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years.
Right.
Just to take everything into account. But I think that 3 years probably minimum is what the Jets would be looking for.
And so, and then Pavi's agent would like that because then he becomes a UFA.
He's got some guarantee. Yeah. So based on your final recommendations, and again, they are available at illegalcurve.com. You can read the whole two-part article there. Based on your final recommendations, you thought that the Jets would sign him, or you wouldn't be surprised if they signed him to a three-year deal in which he gets $2.3 million in the first year, $2.75 million in the second year, $3.5 million in the third year, that being the first of the UFA years, for a cap per year of $2.85 million.
Right.
And it goes up from there. If he went 4 years, you thought he'd get $4 million actual salary in that fourth year for a cap hit of $3.14 million.
Right. And I also did, I mean, it's hard to speak about the article in one segment, but I also looked at, you know, the top goalies in the NHL and the guys who make over $5 million, what their career stats are, what their ages are. Generally, they're older. Generally, they've performed better statistically, and they have cups and they have a bunch of other success. So aside from really Cristobal Huey, so it's a different class there, which you can certainly work your way up to. But on this contract, I think it would be jumping the gun to start talking big money like that.
And the Jets would be happy to start talking big money 3 years down the road if the success comes to Pavlik as it did to the rest of those goaltenders you mentioned. The entire article, again, available at illegalcurve.com. It's a fabulous read. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day, Jets Blues at 1 o'clock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. One final segment on this early Saturday morning, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done. As you're going for a little morning pizza after this, aren't you?
Yeah, a little breakfast pizza.
Breakfast pizza.
A little congratulatory pizza to myself for waking up early.
Well, you're not the only one. Accolades have been flowing in.
Yeah, the accolades have been flowing in from
my mom,
Tanis Mandel.
Twice she congratulated
me. I appreciate that, Tanis.
Yeah, Richard's mom. I mean, a lot of congratulations coming your way.
Tanis has always been in my corner. Sheldon, not so much, but
and your theme song.
Thanks for playing my theme music again.
We just can't have enough of this theme music, really. In fact, I believe you're walking into the press box this afternoon
with that theme music on.
Yeah, I believe the arrangement. Yeah. Well, you know, Pass It Forward has made the arrangements with True North to have that playing. It'll be very nice.
It's great.
Speaking of True North, what do you make of Bobby Hull's comments that he hasn't been invited to the MTS Center for a game and he's persona non grata because he tried to bring a new version of a WHA team to Winnipeg about 10 years ago?
What?
You know, Bobby Hull has not been invited to a game.
I do think that we talked about this before on the show. I think that we've said that without Bobby Hull coming and signing Winnipeg back in 1972, that there would be no Winnipeg Jets today, I don't think. And so, you know, and when we talk about the team with Solani coming back in December, Solani is to us like our childhood hockey hero.
Right.
To the generation before us, that's Bobby Hull.
Bobby Hull, sure.
And so for the people who are going to the games, and there's a lot of young people going to the games, there's a lot of young people who can't afford to go to the games, and a lot of older people are going to the games. In any event, I think that giving him some kind of recognition, inviting him, giving him the cheer. Remember, he's an older guy, too, and I don't think he's at the best health.
No.
To provide him with, you know, that kind of a boost and recognition, which they do in Chicago, I think would be a great gesture by True North, and I would encourage it.
In the interest of being giving equal time, I'll read the following. I mean, Bobby Hull's quote in today's Winnipeg Free Press is, "They haven't invited me," he said, "they being True North." Mm-hmm. He thinks that he's persona non grata as a result of trying to bring a World Hockey Association team back to Winnipeg about 10 years ago. Here's his quote. "I guess when something like that happens, you just ... the hell with you and the hell with the rest of you." True North's response they issued, this is from Scott Brown.
Mm-hmm.
"In general, this season, we as an organization have been focused on the current Winnipeg Jets and getting the organization up and running. We fully intend to honor the team's history, which Bobby is very much a part of, at a later date."
So there you go. So they have a plan at a later date to honor Bobby Hull. I mean, that's the statement that Scott released, and that's where it's at. And he'll Bobby Hull, Richie's right. He, you know, everyone remembers the Portage and Maine signing for $1 million. They got to have a nice night for him. I know that it's probably not going to happen. But it would be nice to go into the MTS Center and see Bobby Hull's number and Thomas Steen's number. And before, we'd like to see the Queen, but now the Queen's back.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, you actually have to go to Phoenix, I think, to see Bobby Hull's number.
Yeah, it's in the rafters.
Yeah, it's in the rafters there, which just still doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense
about
at all.
The history and everything else. But anyways, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The people who made hockey in this city, despite who owns the history, Bobby Hull's certainly one of them,
and he should
feel welcome here in Winnipeg, and I'm sure, you know, True North has done a lot right, so I'm sure that they'll probably rectify this if there is an issue, even to begin with. Chris, let's wrap it up with one final segment. It's called Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Are you going to cheer yourself for showing up on time? Is that what I'm about to hear?
Chris, can you hit my theme music, please? All right, it's been a great show. We started early at 7 in the morning. Chris, thanks for hitting my theme music again. I was going to cheer Ryan Braun. No, I'm just kidding. You know what? I'm going to cheer the GST line.
Oh, okay.
And I know you guys are going to get on me for...
Thoughtful.
Because I'm the co-creator with Jay Richardson of The Morning Show, but those guys represent the city so well and have done such an awesome job, and they're getting so much love, and they were on Rick Mercer recently. And it's not because of that that I'm cheering them. I'm just cheering them because of the job that they've done, and I'm positive that they're going to be back next year. Chevy's got to re-sign these guys, Slater and Glasser UFAs. Thorburn is under contract, but I'm cheering the GST line, and if I could, I would cheer them every week.
We're
love them.
We're well aware of that.
Greatest line in the NHL. I love it.
Richard?
Love it.
I'm cheering the Calgary Flames Twitter account for posting that hilarious message about the Edmonton Oilers. Get a little hate back in the game. Everybody wants to hug. Let's see a little bit of the hatred. That's what everybody really feels. So I like to see it on full display, and I like that they didn't back off of it.
No.
If and Illegal Curve's official slogan is fueled by hate.
That's true. If you missed it, the Flames, when the news broke that the Oilers re-signed Hemsky, the Flames official Twitter ripped the move and mocked the Oilers for it. I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to GRPK Subban. I love the way he plays the game. I love the energy he brings.
Why are you jeering him then?
Because he's got to stop fighting with teammates. I know that it's been a bad year in Montreal, but he's got to stop getting into scuffles with teammates at practice. Enough is enough.
How'd that Andre Markov signing work out for?
Very, very well for Montreal. That's it for this week. A big thank you to Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram. A big thank you to Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. A big thank you to Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Gazette. Also, a big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza.
Post-Dispatch.
What did I say? Post-Gazette? Sorry, Post-Dispatch. Big thank you to Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Cheer Bar and Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get us sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.